This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. Jam-packed 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Coming up in 30 minutes time from the Olean Times-Herald, he covers the Buffalo Sabres. Bill Hopp is going to join us to talk about the Thomas Vanek, Matt Molson trade from the Buffalo perspective. About an hour after that, Arthur Staple, good friend of this program from Newsday, is going to join us to talk about that same trade from the New York Islanders perspective. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Richard, Ezra, good evening, gentlemen. Good to see you both. How are you guys doing?
Ezra's like Kramer in Seinfeld, the way he just storms in the door just at the right time.
Yeah, timing is impeccable. You know,
so you're starting your intro, strolls in that door, sits down, look at him, right, ready to go. Remus isn't ready to go. Now he is.
I was listening to, now that Remo's got my mic on, thanks, Remo. I had to listen to all of H&L. It was such a good show. Mm-hmm. You know, they had Bruce Arthur on. Chris Walby was on, yeah. Former Winnipeg Blue Bomber, 1988 Grey Cup winner. I got a quick story before we get into it here about Gary Lawless and my dad. So Saturday, we did the show. Then we went out and played hockey for Richie's birthday. Hold on.
You got a call during the show.
Exactly. My dad actually said that he couldn't hear us. That's why he was calling. But regardless, the point of the story being that my dad finally met Gary Lawless in person on Saturday at a local grocery store. And all my dad's been talking about for the last week is how he met Gary Lawless and how they, you know, were laughing and joking around. Gary said I was a good kid, which I was surprised that he said that.
Yeah.
And then later that night, we went to a late night restaurant, and Gary mentioned that he met my dad, and he's really excited. All he's been doing is tweeting about it, and I think they might be BFF really at this point.
Wow. But also the other thing you omitted from the story is that your dad was wearing a Canadian tuxedo.
My dad loves the Canadian tuxedo, loves it. My dad's a bit of a hippie.
It's a good story. I got to tell you, I look forward to the weekly updates on the relationship between Gary and John, being Ezzy's dad.
The second part of the story is that as soon as they walked out of the grocery store, Drew pulled up, stole all their groceries, and left.
Yeah, that's true. It was really just a big setup. You see, I needed some groceries, and I, you know, didn't want to do the shopping on my own, so I just had to take it off of unsuspecting people. It so happens the unsuspecting people in this incident were Gary and Ezzy's dad. With that brief interlude now out of our way, why don't we get started with today's show by talking about last night's Jets-St. Louis Blues game. And we can talk about the road trip sort of in its entirety as well, because I was saying to somebody at the office earlier today that close, it only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. So moral victories, yeah, maybe, but guess what? Moral victories in my mind are for losers.
Yeah, Drew, in the NHL and the Western Conference, moral victories are for losers. In the NHL and the Eastern Conference, moral victories are for everyone, which is true. The Jets would be second place in the Metropolitan Division right now. And if you look at it, I believe as of it's the perspective of and take into account where they are right now. The Jets are 18th overall in the league. Now, they've played a lot of games. 18th overall in the league and are the bottom of the Western Conference, one of the bottom teams. So what you're seeing here is a tough conference and a tough division. The Jets go on a four-game road trip. Playing on the road is hard. I actually thought they played better on the road than they had at home.
Which they did last year as well, I would point out, I think. For the most part, I thought they played better and a more disciplined game on the road last year in the abbreviated season than they did at home.
The funniest part about that, and to that point, before I don't want to get off on a huge tangent here, but to that point...
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That's all we do is get off on tangents.
But the idea is, Drew, is... The fans here just want to see an honest effort. Like, if you go out, hit people, and win 3-2 or 2-1, the fans don't need to see something that impressive. They just want to see a win. So it's odd that they would press at home and try and, you know, be a little more nervous and try a little more of the fancy moves, which I think they do, when the fans don't really care about that. They know this team isn't capable of, you know, tic-tac-toe passes like the Pittsburgh Penguins. They just want to see wins. But to the point of, back to the actual road trip itself, you know, you get your win in Dallas, a nice win in Dallas. You have an opportunity in Nashville. Bad turnover at the end of the game. Colorado, you have an awful third period. Yesterday, a terrible penalty at the end of the game. It's just mistakes. And, you know, it's close but no cigar, but it's what I would call unforced errors. And good teams don't have this many unforced errors. Every team has unforced errors. Good teams don't have this many. And the Jets very much are what they are. I think they're gonna have their nights when they're looking good, and they're going to have their nights when they're not looking good. Some people will say if they play more consistent, we've talked about this before, if they play more consistent, they'd be a better team. And I'd say good teams aren't inconsistent like that.
Right. And as far as last night's game, I actually thought the Jets were pretty good. When you're facing the St. Louis Blues right now, you're facing a team that only has one loss in regulation. You're going to have to play, if you want to call it the A game, I mean, the Jets are going to have to play very well to beat a team like the St. Louis Blues. You're tied up at one. I thought they did a good job of limiting their mistakes, and I thought they were actually, Mark Scheifele and Michael Frolik were two of their best players last night. I know Brian Little and Blake Wheeler got the goals, but I actually thought they were pretty effective. Michael Frolik was doing a good job getting in on the forecheck, kind of playing a smart defensive game. A guy like Adam Pardy was pretty good, too. That game, to me, could have changed a lot. Blake Wheeler had that breakaway, not a clear-cut breakaway, but he had a chance late in the second period.
Hit the post.
Hits the post. You could go into the third period up 2-1. Instead, you're still tied. We all know what happened after with the penalty and the late goal. But for the Jets to expect to win that game, I think would be a really tall task. The St. Louis Blues are one of the top teams in the league, not just the Western Conference, and they played pretty well. Now, the fact that they didn't manage to get any points against Colorado was really disconcerting because of the fact that they were in a position to win that game. And I thought Colorado wasn't particularly that sharp, and the Jets again played a smart road game. So
up until a point.
Again, Drew, you mentioned at the top of the hour about, you know, moral victories and how that doesn't mean a lot now because the Jets are behind the playoff line already. You're 14 games into the season and you're playing catch up already. So, you know, you get 3 points out of 8 on this road trip. It's not a successful road trip, but if anything, they've showed us that they can play a more structured game. That's what I saw against St. Louis and Colorado. It was a much more structured game. Richie mentions the giveaways in their own zone. That's something that the coaching staff can't really go into the dressing room after the game and say, you know, we got to stop coughing the puck up and, you know, this and that when it's happening this regularly. That type of stuff is really up to the individual to learn from. Okay, I was pressured and for whatever reason I made these mistakes. We saw this against St. Louis when they were at the MTS Center and the Jets won that game.
Yeah, I got lucky to win that game, Izzy. And to that point of yesterday, the Enstrom decision to basically maul the Blues forward at the blue line didn't make sense for a couple of reasons. One, the Blues have the best power play in the league. And when you have the best power play in the league and you haven't scored yet on a bunch of opportunities, you're almost just below 30% accuracy rate in terms of your power play. So a player has to, you know, oh, the game is fast. The player has to know that going into the game. I guarantee you the coaching staff said, these guys are good in the power play. And I believe Pavlik said it in the post-game comments. You give them enough chances in the power play, we know they're going to score.
Sure.
Whoever it was. Somebody said that in the post-game. So the idea is, okay, you've given them a bunch of chances. They haven't scored yet. You're Enstrom. You turn over the puck. You don't want to go the other way. But you have to be able to understand, I can't take a penalty because they're really good in the power play. I play with Zach Bogosian, who's a hell of a skater, and I'm still not convinced that he wouldn't have beaten the Blue to that puck. And then the other thing is, even if he doesn't, what are the chances that particular play ends up in a goal?
Sure.
And you panic. But the problem is that you need to have more poise. And can Claude Noel yell at Enstrom and make him have more poise, or does Enstrom just have poise or not have poise? I don't know.
The problem that, I mean, especially, you could, you know, to your point about the timing of that situation, you have to be pretty blatant that the ref's going to call out at that point. So, you know, the first sort of interference there, he was probably going to get away with.
When he bear hugged him.
It was when he really bear hugged him. And I didn't get to see, you know, you didn't get to see on the coverage, you know, the perfect angle to see if Bogosian was going to get back into the play or not, or be able to get to the puck or not. But like you said, based on the skating abilities, it's a risk I think you have to take at that point in time. I just don't think you can take that penalty. I'm not saying that Toby Enstrom's at fault for the loss, but it goes to the overall, you know, an overall talk we've had about this Jets team and for the last number of years is how good is their hockey sense? How good is their ability to read and react properly on the ice?
Well, Enstrom took, what, 2 penalties yesterday?
Yeah, he had the first of the game with a high stick, and he had the last of the game.
And if you look at how many opportunities they gave him, the Jets took 6 minor penalties yesterday.
Sure. And this is a team that, like you said, is just under 30%.
So,
you're playing with fire.
Your next 2 are going to go in.
Right. Yeah. And Claude Noel, everyone heard this. We had it on illegalcurve.com. And everybody, and I'm sure that, you know, Ream played it on the round table and they talked about it on HNL. Claude Noel talked about how they're finding new ways to lose. And to me, it's the mistakes are at these opportunities where they're easily pointed out. We can point out whether it's Grant Clitsam in the game against the St. Louis Blues. And a couple of giveaways don't make or break a player. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just because everybody makes mistakes once in a while. You don't pin one mistake to a guy and you judge that guy by that mistake. But this is happening. It's a systemic thing. And it's this year, I agree with Claude Noel, but he can't keep saying, you know, we have to be better. We have to be more disciplined. We have to be better on our own zone. These are things that have to be done on the ice. And if he keeps saying it again and again and again, it almost becomes, I don't know, a self-fulfilling prophecy in the sense that it won't get fixed. And I think that a guy like Tobias Enstrom, I mean, you look at the last 3 or 4 years, he's top 10 in the league in defenseman scoring. I mean, the guy's a good hockey player. He's a good skater. Sure, he has his defensive deficiencies. But the to take a penalty at that point or for Bogosian to cough up the puck against Colorado, these things are, the word I would use is glaring. And they're mm-hmm. almost defeating themselves. That's why I do believe that this, I know a lot of people in Winnipeg are pretty down right now on the Jets because of the homestand and they didn't get enough points and they weren't able to get any points against Colorado or St. Louis. But I do think that maybe they're playing with a little bit of fear because they're already down in the standings or just because they haven't had enough success, they're gripping their sticks tighter.
Oh, mm-hmm. Good teams find a way to win games they don't deserve to win. I mean, it's cliche. It's cliche, but I mean, it tends to work out. You know, bad teams tend to shoot themselves in the foot and make mistakes. Crucial, and because, like you said, I agree with you. Everybody makes mistakes at some point in time in the game. The question is, when do those mistakes happen, and are they so glaring that they end up costing you the game? Last 2 games, Sunday in Colorado or in Denver against Colorado, and last night in St. Louis, the mistakes the Jets made, where, for the most part, I thought they played pretty decently, the mistakes they made ended up costing them the games.
And Richie, there's no doubt that this team has some big-time issues. And we're out all the time, and we talk about this on the show all the time. There's definitely a need for a number one center, a bona fide number one center on this team that can provide them win face-offs and go out there and score 40 goals. They need that on this team. They need to be bigger and stronger up the middle. But getting back to the way the team, I mean, the Jets lost to Colorado and St. Louis, 2 top teams in the West, by 1 goal. These were 1 goal games. These were winnable games. The Jets didn't get beat 5-0 in these games. These are winnable games for them. So even though I think we'd agree that Colorado and St. Louis are probably better teams, they're still beatable teams, and the Jets are proving that they could skate with these guys.
One goal games are a product, you know, somewhat luck, somewhat the fact that you can play to the score too in the NHL. It's not like you know, in baseball where you can play the score in baseball too, but it's, you know, more of a luck thing I think there than it is here.
To see a team get blown out 5-0 or 4-1 or 6-0, to see a team like Edmonton get absolutely murdered on home ice last night in this day and age in the NHL is more rare than a 1-goal game is.
Every game's 3-2.
Right. There's probably 3 or 4 teams that are getting beat like that, right? You look at the Buffaloes or sometimes Calgary or New Jersey. New Jersey's actually done a pretty good job lately. They won last night. They've been doing a good job of keeping the scores low because they've got a lot of veterans on their team and good goaltending, obviously. Schneider's injured now, but the Jets, this road trip showed me a lot. I mean, it shows me that they can play better and they can play up to their competition. I think we saw that against Colorado. I mean, they were in a position to win that game, probably more so than the St. Louis game last night.
Yeah, and to me, it showed me that they're just good enough to lose in regulation to a good team. Let's talk about the roster and if there's any options for making trades on this roster. When we come back, you're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Remus, you like Bowie?
Yeah, David Bowie right now on TSN 1290, CFRW.
Wow, this is out of character for you.
Well, you guys are talking about Jets roster changes, aren't you? So it's either this or Tupac.
I don't quite get that. But
I feel like David Bowie, like Richie's a big Bruce Springsteen fan. I feel like, and I've listened to Bruce Springsteen, I feel like David Bowie's also one of those influential artists that you need to listen to, like Elton John, you know what I mean? Because he's really influential.
Almost as influential as you are, really, in my books. Well,
you know,
let's look at this.
Having a microphone in front of you is power, Drew.
Your dad knows Gary Lawless. That's influential.
Yeah.
Let's look at this Jets roster. There's been a lot of chatter. You know, what can we do? What can be done to make this team better? Who's out? Who's leaving the city? Who's going to come in and make everything better?
Well, we were talking about it on this post game on Sunday with Rick Ralph, Remus's second father, and and
Uncle Rick.
Uncle Rick,
Slick Rick,
and you, Slick Rick, and you talk about what you look at the Jets roster, and you say, okay, you know, talk about trading assets. Well, they're not going to trade draft picks. Well, for all we can tell, even though they have traded some draft picks in the past, they're not going to trade Laddie as the captain. They're not going to trade Wheeler and Little off these deals. I mean, they're not going to do that. Kane, I see very unlikely as their best goal scorer. And then you get to the other guys. I mean, Setoguchi just got him, so you know his market value. Frolik, same idea. Jokinen, you know, fourth-round pick. The other guys on the end of the roster, you know, not much more than that. Defense, you're looking at Bogosian, you just signed him to the deal. That's not happening. The other guys, Klitsam, Stewart, Postman, those guys don't really have any value. So then you're looking at, Trouba's not going anywhere, obviously. And then you have Enstrom, and you have Byfuglien. Enstrom's got a no move.
Yeah.
And Byfuglien's got a five-team no trade. But you just signed Enstrom to the deal. You didn't sign Byfuglien to the deal. So I'm not saying these are the guys that have to be dealt by any means, but those are the two guys, if you're looking for a possible trade, which who knows if it happens, those are, to me, the only two guys who are going to get moved anyways.
The only options, I mean, you're... With the everybody else, like you said, they're pretty much locked in here because, you know, they're Kevin Cheveldayoff signings or whatnot. Mm-hmm. He's staked his reputation to those guys. You know, the only thing that, I mean, Evander Kane, who I mean, maybe in a blockbuster sort of deal, if you don't think that he's going to re-sign here 4 years down the road from now.
Well, right.
But I mean, I know. I'm saying, I don't, obviously, you can't know that, and I'm not advocating for it one way or the other. But you're right. I mean, and we sort of said it, I think, in the preseason. You know, when is Dustin Byfuglien's value going to be any higher than it's been to start this year? And he's probably the easiest of the guys to trade because he doesn't have the ties to these members of the front office. Again, not saying it's going to happen. In fact, I'd be very surprised if it were to happen. But if he plays,
I wouldn't be shocked.
Well, I mean,
I wouldn't be shocked.
What is Dustin Byfuglien? What's he worth on the open market?
Well, hold on. Before we, that's a good question because I think he's worth a lot right now because he's playing better. He's arguably playing better than he's ever played right now. He's lost the weight. He's playing a lot of minutes. I've told this to you guys, you know, up in the press box while we're watching games this year. I think he looks quicker, and I think he's sharper. And you know, sure, you know, he can always be better defensively and. You know, he roams a little bit too much sometimes. But the fact is, speaking of Evander Kane and Dustin Byfuglien, these are the guys on the Jets that create the most offensive chances. Whether it's off the rush, on the power play, you know what I mean by that? These mm-hmm. are the guys, these are the, mm-hmm. the guys that you put out on the ice when you need a goal. Blake Wheeler, sure, Brian Little, but more so Kane and Byfuglien on a consistent basis. And I think both of those guys have been pretty good this year. Now, as far as Byfuglien's trade value, when you look around the NHL and teams are struggling to score goals or teams are having difficulty on defense, you'd have to think that Dustin Byfuglien gets a forward and possibly a high draft pick back if you're trading Byfuglien straight up.
I mean,
there aren't – we've talked about this before, Enstrom included. If you look at the last 4 years, I think Byfuglien's third, fourth, fifth, something like that. We'd have to check it. Yep. But he's one of those top-producing defensemen. You can throw in, you know, Carlson and Keith Yandel and Weber and those guys. That's an elite company there. So if you're talking about trading Buff at this point, Richie, even though he's a fan favorite in mm-hmm. Winnipeg, and he's arguably your MVP so far this year, you could argue Kane, Little, Byfuglien, you're really selling high. You're selling a guy if you want to look at it like that, that right now his trade value is probably the highest. You save him a couple of years from now, his point totals might start going down. So now you could argue if you want to go after a center, mm-hmm. Byfuglien's probably the guy you want to move. Now, I don't think that they should trade Byfuglien, but you know, you're talking about Enstrom's no movement clause. And, you know, Wheeler, Little, Kane, all these guys that they signed to 5, 6, 7 year right. deals, Bogosian. I don't think you're going to trade those guys, right? So you're a couple games under 500, you're going to start trading the guys that you've signed to be in your core?
Well, especially because you just signed them within the last year or year and a half.
Right. Teams don't like doing the Philly, trading Richards and Carter after the long deal. It doesn't look good.
Right.
Sure.
And so right there, Richie, Bogo's out, Kane's out,
mm-hmm.
Enstrom's out. So...
I don't know if Kane's up, but I know the other three are for sure out after the summer, in my opinion.
You've staked your claim.
Lads out, he's a captain too, so I mean, you know. Then you're getting to the next question. If you're trading him, where is he going? Where are the options? I mean, I think some people would say, oh, because of his weight, because of the risk. I think a $5.25 million defenseman, 2 years after this year.
It's not that bad of a contract.
That's not a bad contract for the offensive production. Granted, he gives it back on his own end.
Doesn't matter. If Theon Phaneuf's going to get $7 million this offseason, Dustin Byfuglien would get $7 million.
And you're going to get from only two years, which allows you to kind of see what he's all about, see what shape he's in and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So just almost 3 years, 10 games off of 3 years, based on what's been played so far this year, 13 games, excuse me. To me, that is a movable contract. And to me, there's enough teams that need defense. So I disagree with people who think that he's not marketable. I think he's quite marketable. Now, it doesn't mean that the market is massive for a guy like that, but I think there is one for him.
Oh, the truth is you only really need one trading
partner.
That's true. That's all you need. If somebody gets infatuated or somebody mm-hmm. says, you know, this is a guy who can come into my lineup and really make a difference, especially, you know, that he's not a huge defensive liability. At least so far this year, he hasn't been a huge defensive liability.
That's right. So, I mean, you want to go over the guys, the teams that need him. Philly makes sense because they have centers. Philly needs him, mm-hmm. I think. You could argue Jersey could need him. And then you're talking Zajac or Henrik or something like that. Obviously, they signed Henrik to that deal. Zajac's on a long-term deal, depending on what you could get for him. Washington needs defensemen. The Islanders, you could argue, need defensemen.
Sure, they lost Mark Streit in the mm-hmm. offseason, never mm-hmm. replaced him, really.
You could argue the Islanders, maybe they're going for it now. You don't know. Mm-hmm. You could use a goalie, too, for that matter. Carolina does, but they're so far out of it, you wonder what they're going to do. Not out of it right now, but I think long-term, like they don't think they can do it. This year, excuse me.
If you're trading for Byfuglien, you think that you have a chance to be a very legitimate cup contender within the next 2 or 3 years.
Right.
Yeah, within the next couple of years, or you think you can get him for a real good value.
Yeah.
One of the two. But, I mean, look at the Eastern Conference, Drew. You could argue a lot of those teams need him.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, if you're looking at Washington, well, do they have a fit roster-wise? You want a center. Yeah. You know, then, you know, somebody, a guy that could play wing or center, like Brooks Lyke, well, he's not the same player he was. And the Jets are lacking a guy like that. I don't think Grabowski, the Jets could have signed him, and Backstrom's not going anywhere.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I mean, Carolina, look at Jordan Staal. Well, he's not going anywhere with Eric Staal there.
Right. He's traded for him, exactly.
So, I mean, exactly. And then you look at Jersey. Well, okay, maybe. And you look at Philly. You're looking at a guy like Braden Schenn or Couturier, something like that.
Well, I mean, if you'd have to think, and I mean, we're just totally speculating here, so let me put that as clear as
possible. No, we're not speculating, but we're thinking rationally about what could possibly happen.
If somebody comes to you, if they're talking to Lou Lamoriello, and Lou Lamoriello is putting Travis Zajac out there, you'd think that this team would have to be...
Well, the Winnipeg connection right off the bat makes sense, but also... He instantly becomes your best center.
Yeah, he does.
I mean,
for sure.
The Jets have a hole in center. We talked about Mark Scheifele on Saturday. Mark Scheifele's struggling. And, you know, that doesn't mean Mark Scheifele can't be a first-line center later on in his career, but it's very rare. We've talked about this again and again for a 20-year-old to come into the NHL and even play second-line center, let alone first-line center.
But, you're not looking for a center only because Scheifele's struggling.
No, you're
for a center to improve
because
your depth.
You have no centers, so you have little and nothing else right now, really.
Well, if all of a sudden you know you have a top line center, any top line center, then Little becomes your second line center, your 1B center, whatever it is.
We're just tossing out names. I mean, Travis Ajax, a talented player, has got a good shot, all that stuff. You look at his numbers and you look at the huge contract he has going forward. Some would argue that's not good value,
right? And there's
and
a
you're
couple
locked into further long term deals, and this is your core. So
especially a guy who's had some injury troubles.
That's the thing. He's had the Achilles and. And he obviously misses Parise. Mm-hmm. Zajac and Parise played together for, 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
And they were really dynamic together. And now he's played... Now they have Andrei Loktionov as the first-line center in New Jersey. They have a whole bunch of problems there. But this team is in a position where you get down, you lose a couple more games. We're getting close to the quarter point of the season. It's only 2 or 3 weeks away. And, you know, what are you going to make a move, or are you going to see if you can work with what you have right now? And we don't know that. And, you know, Chevy's not going to.
Well, he went on the record this week and said he wanted to add a forward.
Which is the most, you know, honest thing he's ever said in terms of an interview.
Yeah, he said he'd like to add a forward. He didn't say what he'd trade for him, obviously, but he did say he'd like to add a forward. So, I mean, obviously, if he didn't want to add a forward, we'd be more worried. But he's said on the record, as Drew mentioned, he doesn't say anything on the record, that he wants to add a forward. So then you deduce, okay, what can you trade for a forward?
Sure.
And then you look at, what can you get for him? It's not rocket science,
right? You know what you have on your roster, and you know what it's worth in the market. And if you want to make a big splash, you have to usually give up a big name. Question is, are the Jets at the point in time where they're willing or considering pulling such a trigger?
And before we go to break,
yeah,
if Jacob Trouba is healthy, I think this is an easier decision right now. And if he gets back in the next 3 to 4 weeks,
sure,
I think it makes it easier for them. I think they know what they got. The question is he healthy enough to play?
Because you have an abundance of defensemen with Jacob Trouba healthy that you can handle losing one of them in a trade to bring in a real quality forward.
Yeah, and you've got the prospects. You've got Morrissey. You've got Kitchen. That's where your strength is.
And you don't have to worry about the power play getting any worse.
That's true. It can't get much worse than that. Let's go to break. When we come back, Bill Hoppe, he covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Olean Times Herald, is going to join us. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Get it? Right?
Yeah.
How am I doing here?
You're doing good. You're paying good attention to the show.
I'm surprised you weren't just eating buffalo wings while touching all of those buttons over there.
Guys, this is Buffalo Soldier by Bob Marley.
By the way, I like that you're actually thinking of the guests and the segment, because before, usually you just play AC/DC. What's got into you today? What's got into you today, Remus? You okay?
It's been a long day. I don't know.
He's delirious. That's the problem.
Yeah, wow.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
Bill Hoppe, how are you, friend?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing well. Bill, of course, covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Olean Times Herald, and you can find his work at buffalohockeybeat.com. And your Buffalo Sabres were kind enough to the hockey world to make a big splash earlier this week. Obviously, I'm talking about the trade of Thomas Vanek to the New York Islanders in exchange for Matt Molson, a 2014 first-round pick, a conditional first-round pick, and a 2015 second-round pick. First question, Bill, I mean, is this as good as Darcy Regier could have done for Thomas Vanek?
Well, I guess we'll never know. I, for one, like a lot of other people, thought that Darcy would just hold Vanek as long as he could. Maybe he couldn't hold him until the deadline this year, but he would, you know, maybe hold him until the winter or something. But the Sabres had to do something. They just needed some sort of move. Vanek clearly wasn't going to come back, and he had a good offer, so he took it. And I think, you know, I think he got a pretty good return, in my opinion.
Bill, as far as Thomas Vanek going to the Islanders, and we heard rumors that Thomas Vanek might want to sign with the Minnesota Wild because he has a house there, and his wife is from there, I believe. As far as that goes, did that lead to Darcy Regier trading him now and trying to capitalize on what he can get? And as a second part of that question, are you aware of any other teams being involved in the Thomas Vanek sweepstakes?
Well, as far as other teams involved, there were reports, it wasn't my report, but that, you know, they offered him to the Leafs. I don't know about that. I don't know how that would have gone over in Buffalo if Thomas Vanek was playing for the Leafs. But as far as the Minnesota connection, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, he lives there. I mean, he kind of grew up there, I guess you could say. He went to college there. That's where he lives in the off season. But I mean, whether he was going to sign in Minnesota or somewhere else, I think, you know, they tried to keep him. They apparently were willing to make him hockey's highest paid player, but he didn't want part of this rebuild, and they just had to dish him.
You look at Thomas Vanek tenure, you know, Bill, and he was a pick, obviously, the fifth overall pick, and you know, talked about a ton in terms of playing at the University of Minnesota and well heralded, 2003 NHL entry draft. Obviously, when you then see the Edmonton Oilers come in and swoop in with the offer sheet. But looking at his tenure in Buffalo as a whole, how would you rate his play?
Well, that's a tough question. The team didn't do very well during his, or they did his first couple of years, but, you know, once those, you know, Breer and Drury left, they didn't do very much. He was, you know, he actually became a pretty good player. Everyone thought he was going to be, you know, this guy who scored 40 goals perennially and, you know, maybe hit 50 and was going to be this huge superstar. But, you know, he never became that, but he became a good, you know, became a better all-around player. He became a leader. I mean, he was obviously captain for a few weeks. He did become a very good player, and he still was a good scorer. I just think he was kind of a victim of the game, just how hard it is to score in general. And he was always beat up, and he couldn't get that consistency he needed to become like a true star. But I mean, if he had 40 goals and 80 points again, I wouldn't be surprised. And if you look at his numbers, they are very good. Most guys, I mean, scored about 30 goals consistently. So I mean, in today's game, that's a very good benchmark.
Is he a guy that, if you're a GM, that you build around, or is he the guy that you put as a finishing piece, maybe this is what the Islanders are trying to do on the island in terms of forwards, to your, you know, very talented forward group?
Well, I think the Sabres wanted to build around him for sure. I mean, if he resigned, he might have been their captain for the next 6 years or whatever. But, going somewhere else, I don't know if he's really a guy you build around. I think maybe he's more of, I mean, he's definitely a first liner, and, you know, he's obviously a pretty good leader, but I think maybe, you know, he's a complimentary player in other places.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Bill Hoppe. He covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Olean Times Herald. You can also see his work at buffalohockeybeat.com. Now, Bill, we've heard all the chants at the Sabres games. The crowd has really been angry from day one there in Buffalo this season. A lot of fire Darcy, fire Regier chants so far this season. With this trade, do you think that it's you know, becomes apparent that Darcy Regier is not going anywhere, and he's going to be the one to see the rebuild in Buffalo all the way through?
Yeah, I think I've seen nothing that he's going to get fired. It's hard to explain, but he has owner Terry Pegula's trust, and he has a long contract, and I've seen nothing that tells me he's going to get fired. And yeah, I mean, trading Vanek, I mean, if you were going to can someone, I don't think you'd be allowed to trade Vanek. So, fans don't like it, but it's just the way it is. But like you said, the problem is, I mean, it's a very hostile environment. Even the fire Darcy chants, I mean, it's not, 16,000 people chanting them, but, I mean, you can hear them, and it's several times every game. And I mean, it's only October, so, I mean, you question, I mean, how long can that go on? I mean, it's not a good environment for the rookies to play in. It's all very odd.
Bill, as far as the rumors, you cover the Buffalo Sabres on a daily basis, and you hear these rumors more than anybody. We hear that, you know, Ryan Miller is going to be traded. Drew Stafford has a couple years left on his contract. He might be traded. Maybe Steve Ott might even be traded. Do you see any moves happening in the near future now that we've seen a trade so early with Vanek, or do you think that there's going to be another trade coming up real soon?
Well, I think they will trade Ryan Miller. I don't know if it's going to be, in 2 weeks or 2 months, but I think he will get traded. In training camp, it kind of seemed like Miller was open to resigning, kind of open to seeing what this new team was all about. But I just, given the way things have gone, I can't see them resigning him, and I'm not sure if he would want to. Drew Stafford, I think, he could get traded. The question with him is, he has 2 years and whatever, $8 million left. Does anyone really want him if he's going to score, he had like 6 goals last year. He has 1 this year. He was benched the other night for most of the third period. It's just a question if they want him. And if it's Steve Ott, I'm sure plenty of teams would want him, but I'm not sure if the Sabres want to trade him.
Bill, you mentioned that we're talking about some UFAs, Ott and Ezra mentioned Ryan Miller. Matt Molson now comes in this deal, and if you look at the productivity, he's actually been more productive goals-wise than Thomas Vanek has for the past 4 seasons.
Yeah.
we have to assume they're going to deal him. Do you think that will be quickly, or again, he'll just wait to see when he can get the best offer?
I think they'd probably wait a little while. Like you say, he's a very underrated goal scorer, quietly one of the league's best, and he would, you know, he might bring a first rounder, or you know, maybe even another high pick. But you know, he's a guy. Maybe they want to try to resign. Kind of, you know, they wanted to resign Vanek. Well, might as well try to resign Bolson. The question is, of course, does he want to resign? I'm sure they'd pay him handsomely, but you know, he can probably Matt Molson's going to get paid wherever he goes.
Right.
So I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. My gut tells me he will be traded at some point.
Elliot Friedman Vale wrote in his 30 Thoughts this morning about Buffalo having the dressing room, the effect that the contracts to Christian Ehrhoff and Ville Leino had on the locker room. Can you expand on that? I'm not sure. Obviously, you're there day-to-day basis, so you must have a better idea of it than anybody else. Do you think that those contracts, signing these two UFAs to big-time deals, rock the locker room to a point of no return?
It might have. I mean, they were, for so many years, they were just a tight, homegrown group. I mean, and they would just, you know, they would add a, you know, a piece here, a piece there, a small free agent signing. But, it, you know, 2 years ago, 2.5 years, whenever it was, 2011, they you know, they made a splash and they brought in players. I think Ehrhoff fits in, but Leino, he hasn't quite fit in. Maybe he does now a little better, but he didn't fit in right away. And it you know, they just kind of, they needed a score, and they tried to get the best one, and they just threw him in that room, and it really it didn't gel. He hasn't performed, and I think it did rock the room.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Bill Hoppe. He covers the Buffalo Sabres for BuffaloHockeyBeat.com and the Olean Times Herald.
Bill, we wanted to switch, you know, at the end of the interview here to away from the Thomas Vanek and Matt Molson trade, and maybe talk about the bright spot for the Buffalo Sabres. They're obviously struggling, but they do have a lot of young, exciting players, two of those guys being Rasmus Ristolainen and Nikita Zadorov. In your opinion, how have those two guys played? And as far as Zadorov goes, is it a foregone conclusion that he's going to stay up with the Sabres this year?
Well, Nikita, I actually asked Ron Rolston about that yesterday, and usually he doesn't give up a lot of information, but he basically said that I asked him about the 9-game trial, and he said, you know, we could keep him for an 82-game trial. So it sounds like he basically has a spot to lose here in the next week. If they, you know, if he impresses, he'll probably stay. He's been very good. He's very aggressive. He loves to hit. He has, an offensive flair, too. I mean, he's a very exciting 18-year-old. Ristolainen, he's been okay. He's been in and out of the lineup. I mean, that might continue for a while. But, I mean, just watching him play, you can tell he spent 2 years in a European men's league. He has the body. He just his positioning. And I think he'll be a good one, too.
Final question, Bill. You know, we talk about the team rebuilding. Why is it that, you know, they have Zadorov up there, I understand now, Ristolainen up there. In my opinion, they rush Grigorenko. Why does this team seem to be in such a rush to develop their young talent when other teams seem to take it at a much slower pace?
Well, I mean, their philosophy now is just, you know, let them play, and I think they want to get these guys some experience, and, you know, if they win, they win. If they lose, they lose. And if they lose, they can get higher draft picks. I think that's kind of their philosophy now. I mean, but if you want to go back to, you know, last January, as far as Mikhail Grigorenko goes, I mean, at that point, the Sabres were still a veteran team. They were still considered kind of a contender. And I think with him, they just kind of got caught up in having, you know, a big prospect. And, you know, a lot of those big prospects play when they're 18, and the Sabres kind of forced it. And now they're still kind of forcing it, and he's not doing very well.
Bill Hoppe covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Olean Times Herald. You can catch more of his work at BuffaloHockeyBeat.com. Bill, thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek.
All right, thank you, guys.
Take care, Bill. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
He's right to do this, Richard. He can play your song at any point in time when there's no specific theme.
So we're talking about the Sabres.
We're
here
still
too.
Talking
yeah,
about
guys,
the Sabres Isles.
Buffalo Springfield, talking about Buffalo. I'm
what's,
on today.
What's the song called?
I'm on. This is He Got Game. No, but it's For What It's Worth.
For What It's Worth, there, yeah. He Got Game.
But
you gotta,
this is,
you, yeah. Gotta, you gotta understand, though, if you've listened to the show before, Richie's very particular about the music. He likes the classics, the Clapton, obviously Bruce Springsteen.
I like a lot of new stuff, too, but Remus only plays the 80s, 90s.
Yeah.
And
but
whatever.
I like what Reem's playing tonight.
This is good bed. I'm good with this. This is fine. Let's talk about
true.
That.
Nobody wants you in their bed. Don't worry.
I meant the music bed, Richard. Very clever. My wife said...
well, aside from your wife, of course.
I didn't realize I was sitting beside Rick Rubin over here.
I don't get it.
Rick Rubin, famous producer, Beastie Boys, Jay-Z.
Come on, Drew. Drew knows all about a Rubin, but that's a Rubin sandwich.
I do like some sauerkraut. Let's talk about that Isles, the Molson Vanek trade from our perspective, our thoughts on it. Richie,
you're
camping at the bit.
I thought it made very little sense from the Islanders' perspective.
Yep, I agree.
Now, the Islanders need defense. They need goaltending. They got neither. Excuse me. I think that Matt Molson is an underrated player. He has a chemistry with John Tavares. He's a big body. He's really developed well. Against many odds. People didn't think he'd be... LA didn't think he'd be this good. He's come in, you look at his goal total from 2009, better than Thomas Vanek. To me, it was a trade... Vanek is more talented, Drew, and Ezzy, but Molson gets you just about the same production. So you traded a first and a second and swapped, to me, similar production with no guarantee you're going to sign Thomas Vanek. And if you do sign him now, probably far more above market level than you're supposed to, getting no value out of him. I thought it was a foolish... decision by a guy who I thought had been doing a great job. I mean, you look at the Islanders, guys. Yeah, I've talked to the Islanders, I think it was the end of last year, the free agent show, how many contracts they have, how quietly they're becoming such a cost-effective team. I mean, John Tavares making 5.5 mil, Bailey 3.3, Grabner 3, Okposo 2.8, Clutterbuck 2.7, fine, Franz Nielsen 2.7. All those guys are signed for at least 3 years. Matt Martin, who does good stuff for them, 1 million. Hamonic at 3.8 for the next 8 years, 7 or 8 years, I forget which it is. You had Andrew McDonald, who's been a great young player. He's compliments Hamonic. He's making $550,000. I mean,
he's their number two defenseman right now.
Yeah, you can argue number one. But the point is, all those contracts are great contracts. So why are you making a rash move for Thomas Vanek?
Especially if you went to Matt Molson and said, we'll give you 5 years and we'll give you $20 million. You know, $4 million a year, because you got a window right there when you look at how the salaries are structured.
Below Tavares and above everybody else.
Exactly, below Tavares and above Josh Bailey.
I assume Molson wasn't probably taking less than five until he hits open market.
Even if it's guaranteed and he's playing with John Tavares, he knows he's got Tavares with him for the next 4 years, 5 years, and give him $5 million a year. You got Tavares at such a reasonable price that you can afford to overpay Matt Molson if those two go together, you know, if they fit together so well, and we know that they do.
I want to talk about that for a second. I'm glad you brought that up.
Hey.
John Tavares, 5 years at $5.5 million, that might be the best bargain in the NHL. Tell me a better... I mean, John mm-hmm. Tavares, you could argue, could be a $9 million player.
All those are great bargains.
Right? But just on Tavares here, because I think it is important. Matt Molson... and John Tavares have formed, everybody knows this, they've formed a dynamic duo over the last few years, which is really one of the top duos if you look at it, because, mm-hmm. you know, everybody thinks of, you know, lines and whether it's Crosby, Dupuis, Kunitz, but a lot of the time it is two guys, more so it's two guys as opposed to three guys. It really is. I mean, they really feed off of each other, Kunitz and Crosby too, but it happens to be that Dupuis just sticks on that line. But it's rare that you see three guys play on the same line in today's NHL for 2, 3, 4 years, but with Tavares and Molson, mm-hmm. and they're friends off the ice. The only thing that
Molson was at Tavares' house, yes. or vice versa, when the trade
yes.
broke.
You can. The only thing that I can think about, the only reason Garth Snow gives up the first and second round pick and then trades a guy like Molson straight up for Vanek, which is essentially the same player because you're getting a pure goal scorer, right? Mm-hmm. It's because you don't think you're signing Matt Molson, or you've negotiated with his agent and you think he's going to ask for $7 million a year, and you don't want to pay him more than Tavares. Darcy Regier did an unbelievable job here get a first and second round pick and get Matt Molson, who he can trade after.
He's going
to
flip Matt Molson for, at minimum, given the guy's numbers, a second round pick.
Minimum.
And he might get a first for Matt Molson.
Instead of Gucci's going for a second, you have to think he's going for a first.
So you look at the trade from the Buffalo perspective, and after all its machinations are done, you're going to end up with two first-round picks and a second-round pick in exchange for an unrestricted free agent, a guy who was leaving who's leaving your team anyway.
Let's throw this out there, Richie. Matt Molson started his career in L.A. LA's having trouble scoring goals. You don't think that they're going to give up a player, a draft pick, to get them when before the playoff run? I mean, this is a really odd move, and that's why I think we're all agreeing that the Buffalo Sabres won this deal, because really, if you think about it, Matt Molson's not the problem here. It's not Franz Nielsen, Josh Bailey. These guys are all peaking. This is an up-and-coming team here. They're moving to the Barclays Center in a couple years, and you'd have to think that Matt Molson was going to be a huge part of that, along with Tavares, along with Hamonic, and then all of a sudden you trade one of those key pieces, and plus you give up the draft picks?
Let me ask you guys this question. Let's say, you know, I mean, the New York Islanders are really paying for the right, the chance to woo Thomas Vanek over the next 4 months, and let's say they re-sign him.
If you don't re-sign Thomas Vanek, Drew,
this
is worse than the DiPietro trade.
You mean in terms of the trade?
If you give up a
DiPietro
first and second rounder and have nothing to show for it?
Contract, yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Because, okay, assuming that Molson wasn't going to re-sign, so now you've given a first and second rounder away for what? Nothing.
Well,
and I realize they have prospects, and they have Ryan Pulock, and they have Griffin Reinhart, and they have Ryan Strome. Right. All good prospects, don't get me wrong. But you can never have too many.
Well, I don't mind having those prospects and Matt Molson.
But
right now,
second,
Matt
Drew.
Molson, as you could argue, is a top 20 goal scorer in the NHL. Right, and those don't just grow on trees. Veteran guys that can play with John Tavares.
I never really sort of understood the concept. Well, he's only as good because he plays with John Tavares, as if that's the guy's fault.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry that he plays with John Tavares. Guess what? If we re-sign him for 5 years, he's going to play with John Tavares for 5 years,
that's right.
And we know what he's going to give us. Yeah. I mean, let's play devil's advocate, and let's say they re-sign Thomas Vanek. And it's Vanek and it's Tavares on the same line there.
Well, it'd be Vanek making more money than Tavares. The Detroit Red Wings had an internal salary cap with Lidstrom. The Anaheim Ducks have done it for the most part with Getzlaff and Perry.
Well, Bill Hoppe said it himself.
There's a problem in the
he
real.
Said that he believes that it could be out there that he makes $8-9 million. Yeah. I mean, how do you have John Tavares, arguably a top five, maybe even top three center in the NHL, making $2 or $3 million
top three
less?
Player in the NHL.
Yeah, and there's some RFA years in there, so obviously we're taking that into account. He signed 3 years after his entry level deal, which was 3 years, and that left him with 4 years of UFA status, of RFA status. Even so, I mean, he's making 0.25 more a year than Evander Kane.
And I mean, not that you can take a fantasy draft for as any great barometer, but
they take a GM draft, and every GM would take John Tavares,
and they'd probably take him within the top three or five picks in the entire NHL.
Drew, I don't know if Garth Snow has a rabbit up his sleeve if he's going to sign the Sedins in the offseason.
We have the sleeve. That'd be a tight squeeze. There.
Sorry, rabbit in the hat with a bat,
or a very big sleeve for that matter.
What's the plan here? Okay, so if you don't re-sign Vanek, you have lots of cap room. They already have more cap room definitely than a team like the Jets.
Well, I mean, I think if they don't re-sign, I think they spend the next 4 months trying to re-sign Vanek, and if they can't get a deal done with him by the time the trade deadline rolls around, unless they're right in the midst.
That made sense. They had only one of their guys assigned. They had two guys to sign. Andrew McDonald and Matt Molson were the only two significant players to sign after this year, and they have lots of cap room.
That's right. So
they got rid of Molson, now they have Vanek, and McDonald's going to command them nice money, but he's not going to command over what Hamonic's making. So,
and even if Matt Molson, even if you have to overpay Matt
he's
Molson,
he's a UFA,
mind
you, so he might get a little bit more than Hamonic was at RFA, but yeah.
Well, but even if you have to overpay Matt Molson to keep him around, maybe you don't want to pay him $5 million a year. Maybe, yeah. But if you have to do it, and it keeps John Tavares happy, I mean, I'm curious, did they go to John Tavares with this deal? Because it doesn't sound like they did. And if John Tavares is the face of your franchise, and if he's one of the best players in the NHL, like we think he is, I'm running this past him. I just don't see the downside. I mean, what are you proving? Oh, I'm the big shot. I'm the man. I'm Garth Snow. This is my team. What? Come on.
You know what's more puzzling, Drew?
I mean, we don't know that, Drew, but at the end of the day, I just don't think the trade makes sense.
What about the fact that Garth Snow was the one that called Darcy Regier and asked if he would trade Vanek? Darcy Regier is not shopping Vanek. Darcy Regier is sitting back waiting
Darcy
for
Regier
people.
Darcy Regier is shopping Vanek.
I don't think he's shopping. I think he's sitting back waiting for moves. I don't think
he's shopping him probably actively, but not too actively now, and in the trade deadline he would have been very active, but apparently the Blues were in on it, says Elliot Friedman, and they called the Leafs. When you're calling a team to offer him, they can't be that interested.
Sure, of course. Never mind the fact that there was talk that the Sabres were willing to make him the highest paid player in the NHL.
And that blew my mind. But
consider that a bullet dodged by the Sabres in that case.
They obviously consulted Alexei Yashin on that one.
Yeah, who's still on Islanders books, by the way. But if you look for two more years, but if you look at
it's true. $2.2 million a year.
Wow, is that depressing?
If you look at the Blues, that makes more sense, needing a scorer.
Sure.
Needing a guy who can be that extra level guy. I don't know if he's the guy to do it, but he's a guy who has scored that level before, and that team lacks that number one kind of score if he's that guy. This move doesn't make much sense to me.
So, three thumbs down. We'll hear what Arthur Staple of Newsday has to say about the trade coming up in about 30 minutes' time. When we come back, we're going to look at Team Canada's Olympic roster 100 days away from Sochi. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus is on loan to us from Rick Ralph and the Rona Roundtable. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, 100 days until the Sochi Olympics get underway in Russia. February, I believe.
Feels like just yesterday it was 200 days.
It feels like yesterday that it was just that the Vancouver Olympics were just wrapping up. But anyways, with 100 days to go until Vancouver, until Sochi.
I thought for a second Drew was going to say, felt like just yesterday was the Great Depression.
Thanks, Ezzy.
Before we get started.
Okay. Richie, you have something here?
Well, I got a good text. Apparently, it was tweeted out, too, by a friend of ours wondering if Remus's new girlfriend, Leah, is going to be the Yoko Ono of the group. Can it cause friction in the Illegal Curve crew? I think it's a very good question.
The only thing is we're friends with Leah, so...
Yeah, and if anybody... Yeah. I think Remus is going to be the Yoko Ono and break us up with Leah.
Well, that's a great point. I think he's right about that.
Fine, I got no problem with that.
Remus is going to come in the next segment with a peace shirt and a bandana.
Yeah, Remus is bed in here at the TSN 1290 studios. He's already fallen asleep here. We know he can sleep here. It's just a matter of if he actually gets the bed.
I think I'm going to be sharing a bunk bed with Rick.
That's cute.
Really? Does he know about this?
Well, I came in the show, what is it?
It's Wednesday, Michael.
Sorry, the postgame show wrapped up yesterday at 11:30, and Rick's like, all right, I'm going to go crawl into my bed here, and then I'll be up for the round table tomorrow.
But who's got the top bunk or the bottom bunk?
Me. He's got seniority.
Okay.
I was afraid of heights. I always wanted the bottom bunk.
Yeah, but it's almost better to be on the top. Just because there's more going on up there. You can see everything. And
I was at camp once. The top bunk of wood broke in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Oh, that's... Yeah, for safety, maybe the
Richie,
top.
Who was on the bottom? Do you remember?
Our buddy Josh Team, I think? I don't remember who it was.
Okay, when you're younger, the top bunk's like fun, it's cool, it's great, but when you get older, you're just lazy and don't feel like crawling up there.
When you get older, if you're still sleeping in a bunk bed, you have a more serious problem.
Well, yeah, Leah's over, she sleeps in the top bunk, Michael sleeps in the bottom bunk.
Okay, sometimes you're at like someone's cabin or something, and you know, they have bunk beds there.
You have bunk beds at your cabin.
Oh, we do.
Cabin on the lake. Anyways, 100 days until the Sochi Olympics. If you had to pick one player... Forward, defenseman, goaltender, doesn't matter. If you have to pick one player who's done a ton to boost their stock for Sochi and one player who's done a ton to reduce their stock for Sochi, who is that player in your mind?
I've been championing his cause since 2010, so I'm going to stick with my boy, Carey Price, who there's been some ebbs and flows in his career, obviously, but I've consistently picked him to be my starter. Again, I don't know anything about goaltenders, granted, but I've always liked Carey Price's game. For many different reasons, and I think this year he has looked the best he ever has, and I think he's taken the next step to me in being the number one goaltender, at least to start the tournament. And we know what happens. Starting does not mean you're going to finish it as the number one goaltender for Canada, but start the tournament as Canada's number one netminder. I think he's been terrific.
You think he gets the first game over Luongo?
Yes, I do.
Because history is indicated with Team Canada since they've gone to the Olympics, is that whomever finished the last tournament generally gets to at least start the next tournament.
Well, I mean, Waugh didn't, but then you had Cujo, but then Cujo lost it right away.
Cujo lost it after they lost to Sweden, I believe, when it was 5-2 to Sweden
5-1,
or something?
5-1, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Then Berdur, but the Berdur in 2006.
Lost it. Yeah.
And then Berdur again, and then Luongo. So yeah, Drew, I mean, doesn't mean you're going to... they were close to going to Belfort in 2002, but I think Price has played his way to be the number one netminder for the team right now.
Right, and when we picked our teams, I believe it was 2 months ago, I had Carey Price as number two. I would have to agree with Richie. I think right now, out of all of the goalies, and you got to throw in Braden Holtby, who was outstanding against the Winnipeg Jets a couple weeks back, but you throw in the guys that were invited, Holtby, Crawford, Mike Smith, Roberto Luongo, obviously. I think the only guy that you could say is a lock and is probably the number one goalie is Carey Price. Luongo you put on there for the veteran leadership, but right now, Mike Smith is probably number three, but you can make an argument Holtby might. As far as guys that have played so well in the first month of the season, for me, the guy that I didn't have on the team, and there are a bunch of guys that I think that, I picked that won't be on the team because I do think they're going to go with a faster team, but I digress. The guy that I think has played the best and I think absolutely deserves a spot is Matt Duchene.
Yeah.
I think before the Olympics started, you know, Matt Duchene's an excellent hockey player. And he's really young. You forget how young he is.
Wasn't invited to the orientation.
Matt Duchene was. But because of the guys that you have locked into forward spots, up the middle, you have so many guys that it's tough. And you're going to see, you know, possibly a Ryan Getzlaf. He is not a lock for the team, but you might even see a guy like Ryan Getzlaf play wing. Because you got to think that Tavares, Crosby, Patrice Bergeron on the third or fourth line, those guys are kind of like locked in. Like those are, there's probably four, five, six guys maybe that are locked in. But for me, it's Matt Duchene. He's just been unbelievable for the Colorado Avalanche early this season. And I think he's made a case for himself. Now, as far as the aforementioned guys that I was talking about that I didn't have on the team, I know Taylor Hall's got an injury, but Taylor Hall, Logan Couture are two guys that I didn't have on my team. Mm-hmm. And I picked older guys, Joe Thornton, Marty St. Louis. I think you got to remember, too, guys, this year for the Olympics, might be the last year of the Olympics, and then we all expect in 2016 to go back to a World Cup format.
2014 they're talking about.
Or sorry, 2014 even.
I
think they should probably have a little bit more of a gap, but maybe they'll do that in 2014. But they're going...
Talk about a waste of a tournament, but that's a separate issue.
They're competing against the...
Pardon me, 2015. 15 is
okay. Should be every 2 years. Should be the Euro and the World Cup. Should be exactly like that. Every 2 years you have an international competition.
Right. So as back to, you know, Canada and what they're going... They're obviously going for gold. And they're trying to compete against the best teams. The Russians, the Americans, the Swedes, the Finns. I think right now the team that scares Team Canada brain trust the most out of all those teams is Russia. And I know that Canada's played the U.S. in the two gold medal years, 2002-2010. But this team is going to really, and we talked to Steve Yzerman, Drew, on H&L and about speed, and that's why Richie would have a guy like Jay Bouwmeester on the team over a slower guy. And this is going to be a group that wants to be skilled, and you will have a couple of, you know, role players like a Brad Marchand, but Brad Marchand's a fast guy. So I think that, you know, Matt Duchene has really, you know, made a name for himself here early the amount of goals he scored.
I'll say the other way. I don't think Rick Nash was on my team. We'll get Remus to pull up that. When we do the actual final predictions we have, we'll get him to pull up the predictions we had in the summer. But Rick Nash to me, I mean, obviously the injury now.
Yeah.
But even before, you know, the Rangers kind of finding their way, Rick Nash to me doesn't seem like a guy who makes that team.
And if you talk about last year, the guy that probably boosted his stock the most, and I want to toot my own horn, a year back, I picked P.K. Subban. That was before the Norris year. Mm-hmm. You can go back and check it.
I believe you.
Right. But he's a guy that right now is a lock. P.K. Subban has to be on this team.
I think
a couple years ago, he wasn't.
I think you're right about that. You look at the players, though. Like Crosby's been amazing. Taves, natural hat trick last night's been good. Stamkos and St. Louis have been amazing together. Getzlaf and Perry have been dominating. Tavares is great. I mean, you know who's going for this team, and everybody's playing really well. And you can't go through this list right now of the Canadian roster hopefuls and look at more than two guys who have been, maybe one, who's been all right.
Average.
What about Evander Kane?
I mean, he's not making the team.
He's not. He's a long shot. Yeah. But Evander Kane has played pretty well here early on, and you could argue that he's still a long shot, but with the speed, I mean, we've talked about it before. There aren't that many guys that can match his speed, and he might be a long shot too, but I think he's also playing well.
I think he loses out to the numbers crunch there. He's just not at that upper echelon just yet.
And then what about the guys who can do it all, like the Mike Richards kind of guys?
Right. And that's why, I mean, Evander Kane's just not at that level just yet in terms of, especially Team Canada. I mean, you know, he would have had to have, you know, 35 goals by the end of December in order to be to gain consideration to play his way on this team.
The roster's excellent. I mean, and everybody's playing their way. You know, everybody's playing just just as good as you thought they would, if not better. Nobody's dropping out. I think Nash injuries, and I didn't think he's a great fit for the team. But
our buddy Eric DeHatchick wrote about this in today's Globe and Mail, and he still has Rick Nash on his team. But one name that he doesn't have on his team, Claude Giroux.
Well, I didn't have Giroux on my team either because you don't go to that meeting in the orientation camp. I don't care how much you want to discount it, the ball hockey jokes all you want. You don't think, if you're my teammate and you're not coming to that because you want to rehab your finger, I don't want you on my team.
That might have been a precursor for his bad regular season. If you look at his stats, he started to play. He's on a 6-game point streak right now.
I don't care.
But he's not scoring that much. I know, I'm just saying. Yeah. But now that he started off the season slowly, I mean, Claude Giroux has not played well. Jakub Voracek
doesn't have a goal yet this year.
He hasn't played well. I mean, and he's just started to get a lot of – if you look at his points, a lot of those points have come in the last couple weeks.
They don't need centers. They don't. So do you need him at right wing? You can't find better players at right wing, Ezzy?
He might have played his way off the team. That might have happened before, as you said, at the orientation camp when he didn't show up.
Well, and he was going to have to force their hand to overlook what it's a snub. You know, think about it, a guy like Andrew Ladd. When Andrew Ladd got the call to go to Calgary, I mean, he knew he didn't have a chance to make this team probably, but he thrilled beyond belief to go there just to be able to sit in a room with that hockey genius that's on display both on the ice and in the boardroom there.
Absolutely.
That's worth its weight in gold. Claude Giroux, you're the captain of the Philadelphia Flyers, and you're not there because you're rehabbing your finger? I don't know what sort of finger rehabbing exercises are so specialized that you can't do them while you're in Calgary.
I was ticked off then. I'm just as ticked off now. I just don't understand it. People are making fun of it. It's not a big deal. You know what? It is a big deal.
It's not a big deal.
Forget about the strategies and all that stuff, which you learned and you went over certain things and the procedures and all that stuff. If you need to be part of the team. And when you're not, and you're a captain, you just mentioned, you're a captain, you're not doing that? You're a captain of your own team, you're not doing that? You don't understand the leadership? Maybe. You want to extrapolate it?
Sure.
If you don't know what the leadership qualities are of a captain, and you decide not to go to that orientation camp, then what's your ability to identify leadership abilities in your own room?
You go to that orientation camp, and I mean, obviously they're not giving away state secrets about each team there, the respective players. But you're sitting around and you're soaking up and you're talking to the Crosbys and you're talking to all of your rivals and all of your team's rivals. You're learning bits and pieces, odds and ends, just something.
Not even that. You're learning all that about the game itself. But you don't think they went over strategy about the big ice, how they want to deal with goaltenders playing the puck, how they want to deal with the D-to-D pass and the forecheck and all that. Yeah. They talk about that stuff. Ken Hitchcock, Mike Babcock, these guys are geniuses, right? Like,
They played street hockey and in the media we made fun of it, but they weren't wasting time there. I mean, sure, they were doing some team building, but as Richie mentioned, they were using that time efficiently. They were trying to actually go over strategy, and they were trying to build the team up. And Claude Giroux didn't show up. And again, Claude Giroux wasn't on the 06 or 2010 teams. 2010 teams. Yeah. So he was kind of a long shot in the first place. So that didn't really help him.
Well, he had been getting the buzz as one of the great players in the NHL, and that buzz is a lot quieter now. And I'm sure that the feeling is the same in the Team Canada headquarters.
Him and Crosby don't get along either. And I mean, if he's number two center clear cut, getting 95 points a year, they'd suck it up. But if he's not playing that well, and he's a fringe player, they probably want a player that the best player on the team likes.
Michael Jordan kept Isaiah Thomas off the original Dream Team.
I'm not saying Crosby would do it, but it would probably factor into the decision.
Sure. I mean, Jordan said it's either Isaiah Thomas or me. No, exactly. I don't think Crosby would do the same thing, but there's parallels that can be drawn.
Yeah, you were Remus did that earlier before the show.
It was either Remus or me?
Yeah. We had to pick both of you and then cried.
Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, TSN 1290.ca. Still to come on the program from Newsday in Long Island, Arthur Staple, to talk about the Matt Molson, Thomas Vanek trade from the Isles perspective. But in the meantime, it's time for six things we learned this week.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
Start this week with my colleague Richard Pollock. Richard, Jason Garrison is turning into the player the Canucks thought they were getting when they signed him to a big money deal last offseason.
You know, Drew, I didn't love the deal. I'm not going to suddenly backtrack on that. I didn't like the deal. I thought for what he offered in terms of defensively, I thought it was an overpay for the Canucks. But I think this year he has really come into his own. He's got a great shot, and he's got a really quick release. And he has 9 points in 14 games. And I think that John Tortorella has learned to use him on the power play with, obviously, the Sedins. And it's a talented group there that they have, at least in the top end. I think they're a very top-heavy squad. But I think Jason Garrison, and I think last year also, the fact that he was a BC boy, he put a lot of undue pressure on himself. He seems more comfortable this year. And while I thought the 4.6, and still got four more years after this year, was too much, I have to give him credit for the production he's put forth this year, and I think the Canucks are certainly happy for it. Five.
Ezzie Ginsberg, Kyle Palmieri is emerging as a top six right winger for the Anaheim Ducks and could eventually fill the void that will be left when Timo Solani retires at the end of the season.
A couple of things. To fill Timo Solani's void is going to be extremely difficult, so I want to put that out there right off the bat. I also want to put it out there that last year I mentioned Kyle Palmieri on NHL Midweek as kind of being part of that young, up-and-coming group on the Anaheim Ducks. Emerson Edom's in there, Bolesky, all those guys.
Silverberg now.
Silverberg is in there now that they've traded Bobby Ryan. But if you watch the game last night, this one was easy because last night against the Philadelphia Flyers, he picked the pocket of Vincent LeCavalier and went in on Steve Mason and had a beautiful goal. But Kyle Palmieri is still young, and he's playing more on the third line with Nick Bonino. But right now in Anaheim, guys, with the injuries, you've got Dustin Penner on the shelf. It was announced today that Timo Solani is on the shelf for 2 weeks. Saku Koivu has concussion issues. There's a lot of injuries there, not to mention Suray's been out the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
But back to Kyle Palmieri, the guy's got lots of speed. Watched him a lot. Last year was his real kind of first full-time gig in the NHL and had 10 goals. But this guy's got good hockey sense, really fast, really good, smart player. And I think, you know, in the looking forward in the future, that's a guy that's going to probably fit in on the top six of the Ducks.
Four.
Richard Pollock, the Tampa Bay Lightning are proving that unless you have a bona fide number one netminder, you are better off having two 1BE goaltenders than a middling goaltender with no established backups.
You know, Drew, they went out. I liked what Steve Yzerman did, and then he went for Anders Lindback. He didn't think it worked out, and instead of saying, I'm going to stay with this guy because I want to prove to everyone that I'm right, he went out and acquired Ben Bishop. You know, for Corey Konecker, a forward that he felt like was disposable based on his lineup, and added a big goaltender like Lindback in Ben Bishop. Bishop's been very good this year. But I think the bigger point is, if you don't have Henrik Lundqvist, you know, there's been injuries obviously there, but if you don't have Henrik Lundqvist, you don't have Roberto Luongo, then ideally, what you want to do is not leave yourself open to the Winnipeg or the Edmonton model, which is a goalie that some people aren't sold on, who's nothing but at least average at best, like Pavlik and like Dubnyk. And what happens is when you have goalies like that and you don't have big-time backups, and all due respect to Al Montoya and Jason LaBarbera and Richard Bachman, you leave yourself susceptible. So Tampa says, okay, battle it out. You know, the kind of Toronto model. I know they're paying Bernier, but battle it out. Ottawa's done that before, even with Craig Anderson, with Robin Leonard, not just giving him the job, bringing in Bishop there because they thought it was good value. Battle it out. If you don't have Luongo, you don't have Price, you don't have Jonathan Quick, it makes sense to... Anaheim, Hiller, they have tons of goaltending depth. Elliot Friedman talked about that today in his article. Victor Fask, and they have Jonas Hiller.
And then they've signed Frederik Andersen.
Right, exactly. But the idea is, let them battle it out. When you don't have that marquee guy, you got to have two guys who can do it.
Create competition, you're saying.
Three.
Ezra Ginsberg, in Sunday's game against the Colorado Avalanche, Winnipeg Jets goaltender Al Montoya found a creative way to play the puck behind the net while staying within the trapezoid, thus reigniting the debate about whether goalies should be able to freely play the puck behind the net.
I don't know if you guys even saw this. It was a really unique thing, and I don't even think the play-by-play announcers picked up on it. Essentially, what it was, what happened was the puck comes to Al Montoya. He's just above the goal line. Mm-hmm. Basically, what he did was he played the puck to himself into the trapezoid.
Yep.
Instead of going in outside of the trapezoid, he played it to himself. And the reason why this got me thinking, I thought it was kind of a neat play. It really, if you think about it, okay, what's the big deal here? He's just playing it to himself. Well, the point is he wanted to play the puck, and the only way he could do that going behind the net was to play it to himself, because then he'd have to back up outside of the trapezoid, get a penalty and all that. But I really think that with this hybrid icing coming in and a lot of the injuries that have happened, we have to look at it. And I hope that the GMs are at least talking about it. Sometimes we don't know everything that they talk about at the GM meetings. But I really do think this whole trapezoid business is ridiculous. I asked Marty Broder himself a couple of years ago, and he said, absolutely, I want to get rid of it. I've talked about this on the show so many times, but I just thought that it was a really neat play, and it got me thinking that I like the creativity in goaltenders. I like seeing Mike Smith score a goal. It kind of reminds me that you can make plays, and they're beneficial. You can say, okay, well, Mike Smith's goal, they're already up by a couple goals. It doesn't really matter. But the point is, the goaltender has that in his arsenal. He can play the puck, and he can be a big part of the game. We saw that for years with Broder.
Richard Pollock, Jason Spezza is making his mark as captain of the Ottawa Senators.
You know, and Drew, and I think I'm pointing that out now, the Senators haven't been playing particularly well. I mean, they gave Chicago a good run for their money, and the Senators are sitting sixth in the Atlantic Division. But I think Jason Spezza taking on a leadership role without Daniel Alfredson, you know, having the closed-door meeting. I know they didn't win the game after that meeting, but the idea is that he's taking to that captaincy. And there's always talk about Jason Spezza wanting that responsibility and feeling like he could do that job. And while maybe some people thought Chris Phillips was the guy based on how long he'd been there and the veteran presence, they felt like Jason Spezza finally could take that next step to be that guy. I've always loved his talent. I've always thought he was unfairly criticized over the years, and I like to see the fact that he's taking this leadership role. You know, it's not like Thomas Vanek. I understand that Thomas Vanek's contract situation has been a factor, but, you know, partial captain, out of there. Jason Spezza, you know, closed door meeting. We want to get this thing. We want to make this thing better. And I'm leading this squad.
Sticking with the Ottawa Senators, Ezra Ginsberg says that the Senators need to keep Mika Zibanejad up in the NHL because he is too far along in his development to still be playing in the AHL.
Feels like just yesterday that Remus and I were in St. Paul and we were on the same bus as Mika Zibanejad. He was drafted sixth overall right before Mark Scheifele. And to a lot of people's surprise, Richie, the Senators decided to put Zibanejad in the AHL at the beginning of the year, even though last year he's top five on the team in scoring and he was pretty darn good. And now they've brought him up and he's got 2 goals in 3 games. He's 20 years old, but he's been in the NHL now longer for Mark Scheifele now. He's put in the dues last year, and sure, he still struggles with the defensive side of the game, which a lot of forwards do. Zibanejad is a guy that played in the Swedish Elite League before he was drafted, but Zibanejad is too offensively talented, and Ottawa also needs him up there. And I think that, you know, with what's going on with Corey Conacher, and then they've tried to give Jean-Gabriel Pageot some ice time, and he's not working out. I think with a guy like Zibanejad, you got to keep him up in Ottawa. He's too good. He's going to be a point-a-game player in the AHL, which he was earlier this year with Binghamton. He's part of the team now. I know there's the debate with Mark Scheifele and whether he should have gone to the AHL, but at this point, I think Zibanejad is better served in the NHL.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Arthur Staple from Newsday is going to join us. Quick update in the World Series. Top of the second, and it is a scoreless tie between St. Louis and Boston.
As opposed to a scoreless lead?
That's a good point.
Well, my dad's favorite thing was always, you'd say, you know, who's winning? And I'd say, oh, it's 1-1, and my dad would go, for who? That was the old the old joke.
But I'm Bum Ching. This is TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
In the evening here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. This is NHL Midweek. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, producer Remus. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
We welcome back to NHL Midweek our good friend from Newsday in Long Island, Arthur Staple. Arthur, good afternoon, good evening. Thanks for joining us.
Always good to be back with you guys.
How are you, Arthur?
I'm doing great.
That's good. Got to obviously start with the big news out of Long Island, and I guess to some extent as well, out of Buffalo. The Islanders acquiring Thomas Vanek in exchange for Matt Molson, a first-round pick and a second-round pick. You know, from our perspective, it's a pretty big price to pay for a guy who might only be there for 4 or 5 months. From your perspective, how do you see the trade from the Isles' point of view?
It is a big price to pay. I think it may be a little skewed by the fact that this is not a move that the Islanders under Garth Snow have made, really. You know, the last time they made a big splash in the middle of the season was the Ryan Smith trade with Edmonton back at the deadline about 6 years ago, and that was a first-rounder and a couple of prospects, none of whom panned out. So I think the Islanders see themselves as a team that's not lottery-bound as they've been many years before last season. And I think it comes down to the fact that I don't think Garth Snow saw Matt Molson as a big future piece going forward. I know he's had plenty of success and tons of chemistry with John Tavares, but I think the way that they view the team that they've built, they see them as a speedy team, a team that's going to be built on a high tempo, up tempo game. And Matt Molson scores a ton of goals and has been a solid citizen for this team, but I don't think they see him with the skating ability and the 200-foot game, as Jack Capuano, their coach, likes to say, that's not quite what his forte is. So I think they saw him as someone who was expendable. And I think they saw a team that's been struggling. You know, they showed it again last night, Thomas Vanek's first game. They've just been kind of one step up, one step back, and that's supposed to be a thing of the past with this group. So I think this was also a bit of a message to send to the group that they shouldn't get comfortable with their core group of guys. This is a guy, Matt Molson, who's extremely popular, kind of a leader among the younger guys around the room. And now he's gone, and I think they wanted to shake them up a bit as well.
And you mentioned, Arthur, Matt Molson's chemistry with John Tavares. What about their friendship off the ice? And does this affect Tavares at all in terms of how he views the organization?
I don't think so. I think Tavares is a very professional guy. He's worked very hard to be where he is on the ice, and he's worked equally as hard off the ice. And I'm sure once the summer came and went with no conversations of any kind between Newport Sports, which is Matt Molson's representatives, and with Garth Snow, I think the writing was on the wall, and I think Matt Molson knew it, that they spent their summer, re-signing Travis Hamonic to a 7-year deal, mm-hmm. locking up Josh Bailey for a 5-year deal, and Matt Molson was hanging out there going into his contract year with nothing on the table. So I think Matt Molson knew it, and I think John Tavares knew it, too. Maybe they didn't know it was going to come this fast, but I think they knew that they would be parting company at least at the end of the season and maybe even at the trade deadline. So I don't think that, I think Tavares understood that, expressed some shock, as a lot of the other players in the room did, but, he knows that there's certainly a business side to all this, and when he committed to this team for 6 years and $33 million a couple of years ago, I think he didn't get any guarantees that all of his buddies would be along for the ride. So Mark Streit was another guy that Tavares had grown extremely close with, and he chose not to re-sign because he was asking for more than the Islanders were willing to give. Matt Molson's on his way up, too. After this season, Evgeny Nabokov, who might be Tavares' third best friend in the room, will be gone as well. So I think he understands that, as a captain of the team, you don't get to really dictate the personnel moves, despite what some people out there might think. So this was probably something that they were preparing for as an eventuality, but maybe just not right now.
Arthur, considering that a first-round pick and a second-round pick went from New York to Buffalo, if Garth Snow isn't able to sign Thomas Vanek to either a mid-length deal or a long-term deal, is this a trade that they're going to ultimately end up losing long-term?
I would think so. I think the other part of it is we're going to be asking Garth Snow, and we're going to be asking Steve Bartlett, who's Vanek's agent, lots of questions throughout the season about, where they're going to be, how they're going to talk contract during the season. And I think they're both going to probably take it as slow as possible, Vanek's side probably just to see how the chemistry develops with Tavares and with this team and how he blends in with this group. And, really, why would he commit ahead of time when he could, go into the open market, he could command a pretty hefty price. And as far as the Islanders are concerned, if they can't shake this inconsistency and they start to sink in the standings, I think you could see a situation where Vanek gets moved again to a contender, and Garth Snow recoups that first rounder and maybe then some. So I think they're both going to keep their options open. It would certainly be a curious move to acquire this guy and kind of try to build around this guy, at least for this season, and give up the first round pick and then give up on it in a couple of months. And I don't think Islanders fans would be too happy with that. But I don't think they see that this move is going to be one that backfires on them.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. We're joined by Arthur Staple, who covers the New York Islanders for Newsday. Arthur, you know, obviously it's somewhat of a rental in acquiring Thomas Vanek, but by doing so, you know, so early in the season, the Isles have, you know, 4 or 5 months in order to try and woo him to become a long-term member of the team. You know, did that play into the cost of the deal significantly? You know, the ability, you're paying extra for the chance to woo him for longer than just a straight deadline acquisition would?
I would think so. I would think at the deadline, you know, if Thomas Vanek is still a Buffalo Sabre as the deadline draws near, you've got a lot of, you know, high-level teams that have trying to squeeze him in under the cap that are certainly going to have to move some salary because lots of the elite teams are pressed up against the cap, so they have to move a player. And you would think a first and a second would be probably the starting point once you get down to the bidding war stages of things. So I think from that perspective, yes, you know, it's a steep price, but the price is only going to get steeper as the season went on. And secondly, yeah, you're looking at having this whole season to make this guy some sort of pitch. You know, they've got a couple of Vanek's friends on this team. Kyle Opozo is a summer workout friend and skates with him at the University of Minnesota. And you've got Michael Grabner, who's the second most successful Austrian-born player in the NHL. Now they've got both of them there. They're going to have 3 long weeks in Sochi in the first Olympic trip for Austria that they'll be together. So yeah, there's a lot of ways that they're trying to appeal to him to be here. I think the chief one is that nobody has John Tavares that might be bidding for Thomas Vanek. So, I get the sense that he's going to keep an open mind. You know, there was certainly lots of talk about, you know, he was destined to go back to Minnesota and end up playing for the Wild, whether it was trade or free agency. But I think that was probably more motivated by the fact that he just wanted to get out of Buffalo. And he certainly was very plain saying that when he spoke for the first time on Monday, that was not a situation he wanted to be a part of. And I think this certainly changes things quite a bit. You know, they've had some situations over the last couple of years with bringing players to Long Island who are reluctant to come. Luba Vishnovsky, Evgeny Nabokov, neither of whom is a Thomas Vanek caliber guy who could command a huge salary somewhere else. But there were guys who were reluctant nonetheless, came here, they liked it, their families liked it. I think the Islanders are hoping that same sort of hometown appeal may work for Thomas Vanek.
Arthur, does Brooklyn play a factor in this at all?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think this is purely what the team is right now. You know, I think if this were 2 years ago and the Islanders made this move, you would certainly not be writing anything in pen to say that Thomas Vanek was going to be a future member of this team. But they're in a much different place than they were. They've got a lot of young talent. They've got a lot of guys that are locked up for a long time. And if you're, you know, frankly, if you're looking at a situation of almost any other team, whether it's the Wild or another elite team, it's hard to keep those guys together. I think if you're, you know, a guy like Thomas Vanek, who's not a young guy, he's 29, he's been around a long time, you can see the way teams change, the way his Sabres have changed drastically in his time there. And this is a team that the core is locked up for a very long time. It's a unique situation of any team around the league, and they certainly have tons of cap room if they're willing to spend a little bit more. They've been reluctant, certainly, to do that, but if they are willing, you know, to spend a high amount with him to go above the $7 million per that he's making right now, they still have room to add other pieces. So I think there's a lot of things that go into play when a player of Thomas Vanek's caliber and a player of his intelligence is sort of plotting out his future, and I think the Islanders do get high marks in a lot of categories.
You know, we talked about it earlier in the show, Arthur. The Islanders, you look at their squad, and I liked it for about at least a year now in terms of the favorable contracts they have. A bunch of these guys signed for at least 3 years, talented guys, many of them below market value. I think Garth Snow's done a great job in that regard. But you look at the trade of a first and a second along with Molson for Vanek, and if you look at their production, I realize they're different players, and you talked about the speed element. Molson and Vanek's production has been very similar for the past 4 seasons or so. Would the Islanders have not been better served using that first and second round pick to acquire a defenseman or a goaltender?
I think, you know, Garth Snow is such a cautious guy. He doesn't make moves that are just for right now. You know, he's doing this move, as I said. He's shaking things up. He's getting rid of a piece that wasn't going to be a long-term piece. So I think the way they look at it is they're bringing a guy in, again, as we talked about, he's got know, 70 games to make this guy a pitch to stay here longer term than just this season, you know, being a future part of this core. And really looking in the future, I don't think the market for goaltending is really, you know, really panned out very much. I think it started for this team in the summer when they were shopping around and they weren't really willing to meet Evgeny Nabokov's one-year demands. And they had their eyes on Ray Emery. They had their eyes around the league. I believe that Carson talked to Darcy Regier not only about Vanek this summer, but about Ryan Miller to see what that would take. And I think what they came away with is that not a lot of goalies moved, and the ones that did sign around the league have really been terrible. You know, it's been a bad start so far for some goaltenders. Ray Emery has done nothing in Philly, who was a guy that was one of their targets. Tim Thomas was talked about. He's not really healthy and not really ready to carry a big load. And Ilya Bryzgalov is sitting out in Vegas, you know, twiddling his thumbs, it seems. So I think the goaltending market was very weak. I think this coming offseason it will be much stronger. There'll be a lot of big names available either via trade or free agency. So I think he's biding his time for that. And as far as the defense goes, they're in a bad funk right now. The loss of Vishnovsky to a concussion, and they really don't know when he's coming back, has been a huge one. I think a lesser loss is Brian Strait. You know, the lineup that they're fielding right now has Radek Martinek and Matt Parkner, both of whom are really not regular NHL defensemen anymore, and they've got a rookie in Matt Donovan who struggled mightily and really could do with being a 6-7 guy who sits occasionally as he did early in the season. So they're filling some holes with some pegs that don't really fit right now, and I think they're just trying to weather the storm through the next week or so to see what they have. But they really have a lot of defense coming. You know, it's not ready yet. They've got guys like Scott Mayfield and Andre Pedan and Calvin DeHaan down in Bridgeport. They've got Ryan Pulock, their first-round pick, who very easily could have made this team for a 9-game stretch out of training camp. They really liked what they saw from him. And they had Griffin Reinhart, who I'm sure they regret terribly sending him back to Edmonton in junior league. You know, pretty much the minute they sent him back, the defense started to fall apart. So they've got pieces that they can plug in soon enough, and I don't think they want to change that chemistry, give up another asset to get a John Michael Lyles or one of these defensemen that might be available. So I think Garth Snow is really seeing that this was the space that he could make a big splash kind of move, change a little bit, get an upgrade skill-wise, get a guy who might be here longer term than Matt Molson, who they really had determined wasn't going to be a fit going forward. So there's a lot of factors that come into play for Garth Snow. He's not a knee-jerk guy who's just going to throw Charles Wong's money around just to change things up. So I think this was the move that they had wanted to make all along. If there was a way to fit a goaltender in, they might have done that, but I think the price was a little too steep, and they're just going to bide their time in terms of goaltending and defense.
Arthur Staple covers the New York Islanders for Newsday and is one of our favorite guests here on NHL Midweek and on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Arthur, thanks very much, buddy.
Guys, anytime. I appreciate it.
Arthur, just so you know, you're not one of our favorite guests. You're my favorite
guest.
There you go.
Wow. That is an honor that I take to heart, and now I'm very sad that you guys are over the Western Conference.
We miss you, too. We'll see you in March, though.
Okay.
Thanks, Arthur. Let's go to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Well, all right.
Chili Peppers cover?
Yeah, it's better.
I know it is.
The rapid fire.
Not bad. Well, he's putting in the effort this week. I'll give him credit for that.
Remus only going to play songs that associate with others.
That's good. That's how we should be doing.
It's a Bruce segment. You could have played "I'm on Fire," "Fire."
I don't know Bruce, and I totally forgot.
It's Balls of Fire.
I'll tell you what.
Streets of Fire is.
I mean, fire. In his defense, in this instance, you did leave the room in the break and didn't give him the education.
More importantly, there was a big meeting for Remus and the family this week. Why don't we talk about it?
Do tell.
Let's go back and talk about. I thought Bruce was a Sunday thing.
Saturday.
Well, yeah, right. We talked about it last week. I mean, that's your call, I guess, as the producer in the off.
By the way, Remus tried to deflect what you were about to talk about.
Because I want to talk more about the big meeting on the stationary bike.
Don't even
picture
talk about
it.
Any meeting.
Can you meet on a stationary bike?
Well, Leo's on a stationary bike, and Remus's mom finally got to meet the new girlfriend.
Really?
Heard it went well.
Remus?
Wasn't unwell, as Rick Ralph would say.
You guys are spending way too much time together, that's for sure.
I've been making a lot of puns, too, and I'm like, I'm spending so much time with Rick. Yeah.
So it went well, though, eh? Things are good. Apparently, your brother Ramos gave her the heads up. Like, Leah the heads up that your mom was coming around the corner. It's a team effort there with the Remus and
Dual. That's nice. That's good of Ramos to help out his older brother.
Ramos and Remus are a good combo.
Yeah. Plus, their names are Ramos and Remus.
People think we're joking. That's the names. Like, Remus is the older brother, and so people call the younger brother Ramos because you couldn't call two people Remus.
Stop.
Also, his name's Jonathan, right? Isn't there the O concept?
Oh,
there?
I guess maybe.
This whole show isn't about my family, guys. Can we talk about...
Is your brother's name Jonathan with an A or with an O? Like,
with an A.
Well, yeah, I want to see
how the O is... There's an O at the start.
I realize, but usually it goes based on the A or the O at the end.
I want to give out... While we're on the topic of Remus's family, I want to give a shout-out to Joel Remus.
Oh, yeah.
Big fan of the show.
Big fan of Ezzy.
Great
guy.
Are big fans
great
of
guy. Yeah,
I wonder if he's going to be donating to Ezzy's Movember this year. Oh, he donated last year.
Oh, really?
He donated to Ezzy, yeah.
I'll be
donating.
Give a shout-out to Joel.
I was
going to
say,
Susan,
did you donate last year?
I donated
Remus,
to Ezzy.
Everybody.
I'll be donating to Ezzy again.
I think we can do a whole segment on Remus's family.
Oh, 100%.
We got to talk about hockey. Drew's got really good questions prepared for Rapid Fire. I read them.
I would say they're at best average.
Yeah, well,
Remus, you read them because I didn't.
I'll say there's no question that just allows us to name off a bunch of old players.
I was looking for one, I got to be honest. I was looking for a Rapid Fire question that would allow you guys to randomly name off 1980s hockey players, and I was unable to find
one. Okay, fine. Dave Snuggerud.
That's a good one.
We'll do a score update before rapid
Darcy
fire.
Darcy Walkalock.
At the end of the first period, Boston and Pittsburgh are tied at 0-0. And
Boston and Pittsburgh, you mean Boston? Or talking about NHL?
Yeah.
Remus. I'm talking about, I said score update.
Anyway. Oh,
score
update.
I thought we were doing a World Series update. Sorry.
It's also 0-0.
It's also 0-0. But in Calgary, the Leafs have just taken a 2-0 lead on the Calgary Flames, scoring in the last minute of the second period. So the Toronto Maple Leafs continue their hot play.
They're in first place in the East right now.
Doubleheader out in the West on TSN tonight.
Yeah, that's right. That game's on TSN. And then afterwards, another great game, Detroit and Vancouver, which used to be a conference rivalry.
Talk about dynamic duos, Olympics, JVR and Kessel. You got to think that those guys are going to play together on either the top line or the second line for Team USA.
I want to go back to something you said about, you think that Team Russia is the team that Canada's most afraid of at the Olympics?
The home team?
I do. Yeah. And it is because it is in Russia.
Really?
I think if you want to look at it...
Not Sweden?
We haven't analyzed it too much because we'll do that when we preview the Olympics coming up in February of next year.
Yes.
But you could argue that the Americans have the best goaltending. And when you have the best goaltending, we know how intimidating Dominic Hasek was in 1998. Jonathan Quick, Corey Schneider, whether it's Ryan Miller, those guys have the ability to scare teams in a tournament where it's basically one game elimination. No, it is one game elimination.
Yeah,
you know, the Americans are a scary team, but I think Russia, just because of the skill level. And the goaltending probably for Russia is the big weakness. But when you throw out, you know, Kovalchuk will be there even though he's in Russia. And you always, you know, you're going to have... Russia's going to have some interesting competition for their team as well. And I think you look at their forwards, it's a pretty dangerous group.
It's that it means everything to them. It's that they've been talking about it for 8 years since they announced Soshi, whenever that was. It's that they play on the bigger ice. It's their speed game. It's all that stuff gives them a huge advantage to me. I mean, Sweden, I think, has an advantage. But the Russians are catered, all they care about is this tournament. It's like Canada here. At home, I mean, it's win or else. So I think that's the biggest competition. Right. Doesn't mean they'll even face them. But I mean, Sweden, I do want to talk about Enström today.
Yeah, Toby Enström telling Team Sweden that he's not interested in playing for their Olympic team this coming year, this coming Olympics in Sochi.
I think that the reason why Enström decided not to play was because his stick was actually going to be too long. And they weren't going to allow him to use that big stick. Like there wasn't a suitcase big enough for him to put those sticks in. That's what it was.
Could very well be the problem.
I think Sweden should have asked him not to come. Well, because if you look at Brodin, Ekman Larsson, and you think of, okay, so you have those two guys, Erik Karlsson, obviously, and Cromwell, those two are shoe-ins.
Yeah, that's your top pairing.
And then, I mean, Enström should be on the next pairing. He should be on the third pairing. But Alex Edler, Jonathan Eriksson.
Alex Edler suspended, keep in mind.
Yeah, that's two. He'll still make the team, I believe.
Yeah.
He'll be on the team. Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, Oduya. So, I mean, guys like Oduya and Talinder, you can argue Chalmerson's better all around than Enström if they don't need his offense. So, I mean, I don't think it absolutely kills their chances.
Well, Sweden's a top team. I mean, they won gold in 2006. They're always in there. I mean, if you want to rank it, that's probably your top four teams with Canada, U.S., Russia, Sweden. Finland's always tough to beat. I probably wouldn't put
Canada's never played Sweden in a knockout game at the Olympics.
Really?
Yeah, well, go back. Think about it. 2002.
Peter Forsberg.
Yeah, 02 was the
02
Salo
was
goal.
The Salo goal. 06 yeah. Canada flamed out in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, Russia.
2010, they beat I think who they beat? They beat Russia in the
Germans, Russian, was it Belarus, Russia, Slovakia, US, yeah. yeah.
So 2010, sorry. Yeah. I'm thinking of
yeah, I just always find it because yeah. I mean, you think about the last decade or so of hockey,
yep.
and Sweden's always sort of up there with Canada in terms of the countries that had the best performances, best teams going to the Olympics. I find in my humble opinion, and they've never met each other in a knockout round at the Olympics.
It might happen in February 2014.
Yes, it could very well happen in February 2014. I always just because it goes back. I mean, remember in Salt Lake City, everybody was saying that They choked against Belarus. If they don't choke against Belarus, Canada's road to the gold in Salt Lake City is so much harder. But
they got to make sure Henrik Lundqvist is healthy.
Yeah, well, that's a big one because he's he's really the key to that team in net.
But their first two lines. I mean, their three centers can be Henrik Sedin, Nicholas Backstrom, and Henrik Zetterberg.
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby. And you could put obviously Zetterberg to the wing. Steen can play with center and wing. Louis Eriksson, Johan Franzen, Patrick Berglund. I mean, they're not as deep as Canada, top
to
bottom.
Is one of those players that, is he eligible to play for Team Canada?
No, because once you play internationally for one country, yeah. you're committed yeah. to that country.
Right. It's like Pominville, the U.S., Nedved right. with Canada, right?
Brett Hull.
Yeah. Brett Hull.
Yeah, Brett Hull played for Team USA because he didn't make, was it the World Junior team he didn't make for Canada?
Yeah, I think it was that.
Yeah, that was going way back when, of course. That was, before 90. He played for Team USA at...
Well, that was early. That was in the early
80s. I know,
80s,
but he played for Team USA in Nagano, didn't he?
Oh, he played for World Cup. What do you mean?
Yeah, I know he played
96.
I know he played
kicking
in 96.
Kicking in the high stick. The Amante kicking in the high stick by Hull. Yep.
I know he played in 96. Did he make it to 98 as well?
Yeah. Didn't he trash it?
He was one of the guys who supposedly, allegedly.
Yeah. Yeah. Phil Housley,
him and
Roenick.
Kachuk, right?
Yeah, Kachuk.
I don't know who did it, but.
Well, that was always the.
I thought it was Roenick, wasn't it?
Was it Roenick?
I thought it was Kachuk, allegedly.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a few in there.
Yeah, there was definitely a few in there that were involved.
Well, that was a hell of a rapid fire.
What was it better than rapid fire?
Way better than
I think so.
Wrote.
Yeah, now I can save those questions for Saturday's show where you're not going to be there, Richard.
Is Dave Minuk sitting in?
We don't know. We haven't talked
to
Dave.
Is he? I talked to him.
Okay, Remus can come in. Dave can come in. The more the merrier. Richard's gone. He's gone on Saturday and Tuesday. Programming, though, Tuesday for NHL midweek next week because the Jets play on Wednesday. Richie, you'll be away for those two shows. Off on a big birthday trip to California. Going to go Hollywood on us?
Going Hollywood.
Big thank you to our guests today, Bill Hoppe and Arthur Staple. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes and on TSN1290.ca. We encourage you to follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. One more time, Tuesday next week for NHL Midweek, 6 o'clock here on TSN 1290. Saturday morning, 8 a.m. start for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Bright and early with the Jets-Blackhawks game at 2 p.m. For Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Wednesday, you know that it's NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.